Hello, imperfect leaders. This week, many of us are joining the millions of people traveling for the Thanksgiving holidays. You know, road trips are an appropriate metaphor for leadership. In this encore episode of the podcast, let's do that. Let's think of leadership as a road trip, and let's let Dr. Nick Poliak be our seasoned driver. In our conversation about the routes of continual improvement, for which there are many, highways, byways, detours, dead ends. But in this case, my takeaway was it's not about reaching a final destination. It's about enjoying the ride and growing along the way. And sometimes there are stops. One stop is we'll stop at Nick's role as the moderator of the hashtag Soup Chat, a digital caravan of leaders sharing insights and creating a community that's essential for the road ahead. And in our Imperfect Leadership and After Action segment, Nick opens up about involving family in major life decisions, a real and raw aspect of the leadership road trip. And as we cruise along, Nick leaves us with a personal roadmap of advice for aspiring leaders. So buckle up, friends. We're about to hit the road on this personal and insightful journey of unfinished leadership with Dr. Nick Poliak. The engine is humming, the GPS is set, and our podcast adventure is ready to roll. Too much? Sorry, but thanks so much for tuning in. As many of you know, I wrote a book. In the book, I use the term the power of language to describe the work of a leader. Stories and the art of framing and the use of metaphors, they all make specific appearances, and that brings me to my guest today. When you think about leadership, do you think of it as a sprint or a marathon? My guest today uses the power of language to pose that exact question, and he tells you how leaders answer that question. He also does a remarkable job of describing the importance of including the people most impacted by a decision. My guest is Nick Poliak. He is great. Thanks for tuning in. Today on An Imperfect Leader, Dr. Nick Poliak is my guest. Nick is a superintendent from Leiden Community High School District 212 in Franklin Park, Illinois. He has served as a math teacher, a tennis coach, a soccer coach, and then moved into administration at the building and central office levels. As the leader of Leiden Schools, the school district has received many recognitions from the College Board, the National School Board Association. Those are just two examples. Nick, welcome to An Imperfect Leader.
Peter, thank you so much. I'm absolutely honored to be here with you today.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. Nick, among your many certifications and degrees, you too completed the AASA National Superintendent Certification Program. And it's clear that leadership and leadership development are really important to you. And you co-wrote The Unfinished Leader, a school leadership framework for growth and development. And you also co-moderate hashtag Soup Chat, the national Twitter chat for superintendents. Would you take a minute and just tell us a little bit about The Unfinished Leader? And also, how does Soup Chat work?
Sure, of course. I'll start with The Unfinished Leader. Two of my colleagues, good friends, Mike Lubelfeld and PJ Capozzi, we write together as it's cathartic for us as a break from some of the other work we do. And we really enjoy that. And so we wrote this book, The Unfinished Leader, kind of based on a simple concept, is that people like to talk about trying to be the best version of themselves. And we push back gently and say, there's no such thing as the best version of yourself. There's only the next version of yourself. Every one of us is in this constant iterative process in our personal and professional lives. And the more that we can lean into that and just acknowledge and accept the fact that we're unfinished, and that's okay, and that's a good thing. So that's what unfinished is about. I love to make an example when we talk to folks about this. And I'll say, think about your work, the stuff that you do every day. Is it more of a sprint or is it more of a marathon? And some people say sprint, some say marathon, some say sometimes it's a sprint, sometimes it's a marathon. And I like to say, really, if you could zoom out far enough, it's all a relay race. You know, every one of us is holding this baton. You know, for me, I'm holding the superintendent at Leiden baton, and I'm going to run as hard and fast as I can for the time that I get to hold it. But eventually I hand it off to the next person, just like I picked it up from the person before me. And so even the work we do is unfinished. You know, I've got maybe 10 more years till I'm going to retire, but the work keeps going. It's always unfinished.
I love that as a metaphor. the pulling back and seeing, we often say we stand on the shoulders who come before us, but this is an even more powerful one because sure, there are times where we sense this urgency and we sprint. There are other times where through our strategic planning and things like that, we try to look forward 3 to 5 years and we see this as a marathon kind of thing. But really the idea of having to pass off the baton means so much. It makes so much sense because there will be people who follow us that we have to hand this off to. If you look at my logo and my for the work that I've been doing, it has a Daruma doll and there's only one eye circled in or filled in. And the Daruma doll is this Japanese doll. You set a goal and you fill in one eye. And then when you've completed that goal, you fill in the other. And I left it intentionally open for the same reason, that the work is really unfinished, particularly in public education. So thanks for that metaphor. That's fantastic.
Of course. You asked about Soup Chat also. Mike Lubelfeld and I created that about 8 years ago as a way for us to connect with our colleagues and friends across the country. And so literally we just come up with a topic every month. We create some questions and we throw them out on Twitter and people from around the country and sometimes around the world just to jump in and share their ideas. It's some of the best free professional development you're ever going to get and some of the best connection making, because what it's led to is when we go to a conference or somewhere and you see somebody, you're like, wait a minute, I know you. We've interacted during Soup Chat. And so that, like, that technical piece becomes a human interaction when we get to meet these people in person.
Yeah, you know, the superintendency is such a lonely job. And so to have the opportunity to have other colleagues around the country and to actually then have a personal connection to them is really meaningful. I didn't want to step on the unfinished leader. Are there other pieces that you would want to share about? I mean, there's a framework associated with it. It isn't just our work is unfinished. There are some components to it for leaders to develop, to continue their own development, their own professional learning.
Yeah, I mean, we started off, we sectioned it, and we purposely start with empathy and equity, those lenses. Because if you come to my school district, for example, you know, I serve a community that is majority labeled as low income. We're about 70% Latinx. You know, and I am neither of those. And so if I look at my lived experiences and who I am up to this point, my lived experiences don't necessarily match the community I serve. So how can I ever be the leader they need me to be unless I start my work with a lens of empathy to understand those people that I serve and what their needs are, and the lens of equity to what do I need to do to help the people that I'm charged to serve? So that's an example, I think, of what people might experience if they look at the book.
Thank you. In the leadership model that I use to advise others, there's a dimension called nested patterns. Actually, empathy and compassion are two in there. But nested patterns really references or refers to the muscle of an organization's work. And inside that dimension is a term, high levels of collaboration and shared leadership. And in learning more about you, I've noticed a few things. You've been a co-author of The Unfinished Leader. You've also been the co-chair of AASA's Transformational Leadership Consortium. Working with others and sharing leadership seems to be really important to how you lead. And I wonder, would you talk a little bit about that? Why is collaboration so important for leaders to practice?
Thanks, Peter. There's a very simple thing that I refer to often, which is that we're better together. Yeah. Could I possibly have all the good ideas that are necessary to do the work that I do? No, it's never going to happen, right? But we collectively have the good ideas that we need. And so who's the we? How do I collect people and collect ideas? And I love leading the Transformational Leadership Consortium because we go on site visits across the country. We pick school districts that are doing innovative things, and we go there together as a group, and we learn from the school district. We get to know each other. We build, you know, professional collegial relationships with all these folks across the country. And then we take these ideas that we see in school districts and we say, well, that wouldn't maybe work in our district, but if I adapted a little bit, this is the version that would work back for us. And so what you end up getting is this collective lift of ideas and learning. And so, you know, everybody benefits across the country if we can all kind of be humble enough and willing enough to learn from one another.
I think if anything, post-pandemic, there is a increased willingness to learn from each other because we were all thrust into the most unknown set of circumstances, and we had to learn from each other about everything from how do I get food to children who are not coming to school? How do I get technology to them? How do I make sure their mental health services are needed? How do I make sure that, as we know, particularly in the district you just referenced and in Leiden, if you have a high free and reduced lunch population, then it is more likely than not that children were left home while their parents who were in the service industry had to go to work. And so how do you do all those things? And leaving that all on your shoulders or your team's shoulders, I'm sure was seen as an impossible task, but not when you could reach out to others and figure that out together.
Absolutely.
I ask this question to every guest, and I was nervous to ask you because of your book, because I think that there's probably some similarities between the terms unfinished and imperfect. I wonder, though, how does the term an imperfect leader resonate with you?
I really like the term imperfect leader. It brings me back to, I talk often to people about this idea of the imposter syndrome. You know, someday somebody's going to find out I don't know what I'm doing and I'm not prepared. You know, I think anybody who feels that way should actually accept that as being a really good positive quality, because it shows your humility to not think you've arrived, to not think you're perfect, to not think you're finished. And so if we can all just kind of lean into it and surround ourselves with people, be willing to let that collective lift drive us instead of the personal one, because we're all imperfect, we're all unfinished. And so, you know, if you can be humble enough to accept that and just say, yeah, I'm gonna have to learn from Peter today, but hopefully Peter's gonna learn from me, and we both walk away maybe less imperfect, closer to this idea of finished than we were, you know, an hour earlier.
An imperfect leader, leadership in after action, is supported by ILAA, a firm dedicated to supporting aspiring new and established leaders. For more information, please find them at human-centeredleaders.com. We'll be right back. In the many conversations I've been having with leaders all across the country, there are some themes that keep popping up. And one is the fact that children are really having a hard time engaging in school. And one big part of that is the phone that's in their hands. Schools around the world are seeing the damaging effects of phones on student engagement, social development, mental health. Yonder is a company that has developed a unique product and program to allow schools to become phone-free, from arrival to dismissal. Learn why 1 million students use Yonder every day. Minimize distractions. Maximize learning potential. Go to overyonder.com to learn more. We're back for segment two of An Imperfect Leader, called Imperfect Leadership in After Action. My guest is Nick Poliak, superintendent of Leiden School District 212 in Franklin Park, Illinois. And in this segment, we ask our guests to deconstruct a decision that they had to make, and then we just discuss a little bit. So, Nick, what happened?
So, Peter, I'm going to go backwards a little bit before I go forward, if that's okay. You mentioned earlier that I had been a building level administrator and teacher and coach. During that time, I was also a school board member. I'd gotten on the school board of the community where I lived and had an experience of that for 4 years. Before my family and I moved down to Central Illinois for me to be a superintendent. So we're down there, we're having this amazing experience, great district, great board. We were there for 4 years, but the superintendent from the district I used to be on the school board for was retiring. And I thought, what better opportunity than to go back to where we were, go back and work with the board that I had been with. And so I decided to apply. And I didn't want to put all my eggs in one basket, so I applied for 3 school districts. Back then, this was 10 years ago, like 2012, 2013. And so I went through the 3 interview processes, and as it all played out, all 3 processes ended at about the same time, and I got offered all 3 jobs within 48 hours. And so I made a quick phone call to my mentor, who's been watching out for me in my career, and I talked it through with him, and I made a decision, and I accepted a job. I didn't accept the job where I'd been on the school board. I picked the job up here at Leiden. Shortly thereafter, I realized I'd missed a very important step. I didn't involve my family, and I didn't involve, more specifically, my wife in this huge life decision. And it's been one of the things I've looked back in is the stupidest thing I think I've done professionally in my career.
Professionally, potentially your wife's going, and personally, I mean, you married your mentor.
Seriously. Yeah. Peter and I think about it. We were in a situation where we'd been in this community down there for 4 years. My wife and my kids, they'd formed relationships. They'd put down roots. My kids were on sports teams. They were doing sleepovers at friends' houses. And so, you know, my decision was a family decision, but I lost sight of it when I was in the middle of the job search and the interviews and, you know, trying to make the best decision for my family. I lost track of the other key stakeholders that I needed to involve in this huge decision.
Yeah, you're really speaking to the second question of what got overlooked. You have this incredible opportunity. Those who are listening and who have applied for jobs are thinking, you had three offers, three? Wow. So you talk it over with your mentor and you arrive at a decision that really makes sense for you professionally, you know, makes sense in terms of your family, but there's a piece that got missing. Would you add anything else in terms of what got overlooked?
No, I think I, as a former math teacher, I think I let my logic take over instead of the emotional side. And I didn't process it through all the lenses I needed to. You know, I'd come to the conclusion that this is the best thing for us. And I jumped. And I think part of me was worried that if I waited too long, they're just gonna go to the next person. And you get caught up in the flattery of the moment.
Right.
There's so much I would do different.
What did you learn about relationships, or what new relationships were formed because of it?
I think my wife and I, while we went through a rough patch on the back end of that decision, I think it was a wonderful learning moment for us as a couple and as a team for our family. And so, you know, me having to eat a lot of humble pie to own up to what I had done or not done there. I think we came out the back end of that stronger as a couple. It took us a little while to get there, but we're stronger now.
I imagine also for your children or for those who are close to you and observing that, you really did model. I mean, when you're a superintendent, that relationship between your job and all of the responsibilities that come with that and your job as a spouse and a parent and a strong, you know, friend and member of the community, they have a constant pull. They're both pulling you in different directions. I imagine those watching you were able to see how you modeled how you deal with conflict as opposed to throwing up your hands and saying, that this is sort of, we've reached the point of no return kind of thing. So.
Sure. Yeah.
What frustrated you?
I was frustrated in that process with myself that I didn't have the foresight and I stepped right into this. And it was a problem that I couldn't fix. You know, when you go into, especially school administration, we're fixers. You know, there's a lot of planning and foresight, but a lot of times the phone rings, the person comes in your office and you're trying to fix. In this particular case, there was nothing that was going to fix it, but time and trust being rebuilt. And so I think I was just frustrated that I let myself get caught up in it without taking a step back to process before going forward.
What could you have done differently? People are like, I could tell you what he could have done differently, but
everybody's nodding their head going, I know.
Exactly.
You know, there's a contributing factor to this too that I guess maybe I left out. One of my sisters adopted their daughter from Guatemala. And around this time, she was going back on kind of a mission service trip to volunteer at the orphanage and brought my mother and my wife with her. And so they were absent while these interview processes were going on. So, you know, as I'm in the throes of a major potential career change, my wife, my sister, my mother are all in another country. I think what I could have done differently, obviously, in asking them was be upfront and honest with the boards of education to say, I appreciate this offer. I'm going to need a little bit of time to talk about it because I have to speak to my wife who's unavailable at this time. And I should have pressed that pause button very honestly and openly with those school boards to do my due diligence.
If you could change your perspective since you've been a school board member, do you get a sense that the board would have said, no problem, yeah, take your time. We understand this is a big decision and you need to bring your whole family into this?
I believe at least two of the three districts I was interviewing with would have been very respectful of that. And that's a good indicator of actually a good situation to come into. There's one of them that I'm not so sure that they would have given me extra time.
In the end, what was something that was good that came out of this experience?
So Peter, that was 10 years ago. And my kids, who were little at the time, are now in college, in high school, getting ready to transition to college. And they have said to me, Dad, moving us here was the best thing you could have done because of these additional opportunities I've had. My daughter, for example, is a sophomore in college, and she was a very accomplished badminton player in high school. And there was no badminton where we lived before, and she never would have even seen it as a sport. My son is applying for colleges right now and has taken, you know, in different advanced placement courses. We didn't have all those courses in the district where we lived before. And so my children have actually reported to me that what we did has benefited them academically, personally, athletically. And so, you know, it makes me feel a whole lot better now.
I was going to say, you're a little bit off the hook.
Yeah. I guess the journey was rough, but the end result was good.
In the end, this podcast is designed to help aspiring and early in their career, established leaders learn from the experience of other leaders. No doubt they're getting that from your book, The Unfinished Leader, as well. What advice would you give to an aspiring leader?
I love, Peter, I love teaching aspiring superintendents and trying to help in any way possible. The simple advice I give is be humble and work hard. Leadership positions, my experience has been, can often attract type A personalities and people who think they have all the answers. And having been a superintendent for 14 years now, the people with that kind of mindset, they come and they go, right? They burn out. They're not relationship builders. They run into problems. They're argumentative, whatever attributes you want to put there. But the people that are going to put their head down and work hard and be humble enough to say, I need help. I'm going to bring in somebody else. I don't need the recognition. I just need the good outcome for our students. Those are the people that thrive. So, you know, be humble, work hard. It's a pretty simple outline.
It sounds like be humble also means to serve as that lead learner, to admit when you've made a mistake. Does that resonate?
It does. Yeah. Being willing to admit mistakes, to me, ranks right among being willing to say, I don't know this answer. You know, we write in the book about this idea, this manifestation of a bag of tricks, you know, that you go through your life and you gather experiences and solutions and you throw them into your bag of tricks. And then, you know, when you come upon something, you look in there and you say, well, do I have the answer to this one? And sometimes your bag does, but more times than not, it doesn't. And so are you humble enough? Are you willing enough to turn to the person next to you and say, hey, can I look in your bag? Do you have this one? Because I don't. You know, and the frustration through the pandemic was all of us were looking in our bags and they were all empty.
They were full, but you're like, I don't know, juggling. This seems like, what am I, you know, the tape that you pull out of your mouth, you know, with lots of the colors and just keep, you know, none of these things are actually going to help me in this predicament.
Correct. Exactly.
Where did you learn that? Where did you learn those two in particular, when you give that advice of being humble and working hard, who taught you that?
I have had amazing mentors and colleagues throughout my career. When I think about the Illinois Association of School Administrators, IASA, and AASA, the American Association of School Administrators, the people I've met through these aspiring programs, the people I've met through the Transformational Leadership Consortium, I think I'm fortunate to have one of the most amazing networks of colleagues and friends. And so I see them doing it. We learn from the people in our lives every day. Some people, they teach us lessons about who we want to be and what we want to do. And other people teach us lessons about who we don't want to be, what we don't want to do. And so, you know, gathering those people and taking lessons where you get them, they build us all into the next version of ourselves.
When you talk about the transformational piece, the consortium, what was one innovation that you saw that you looked to bring to your own district? While you're thinking about that, I went to Ann Arbor, Michigan, because my AASA partner was the superintendent there. So Janice Swift was amazing. And I learned there about their early college programming, you know, that kids in high school could take courses at local community colleges and graduate with their high school diploma as well as their associate's degree. And I thought, oh my God, why are we not doing that? Our Chamber of Commerce said, yeah, why are we not doing that? And so it became a real rallying cry, that kind of innovation. It's those types of visits that open your eyes to opportunities. So I'm so glad to know that there's a actual coordinated effort to bring superintendents and leaders from around the country together to just do some dreaming and to see those dreams in action. Because it's one thing just to dream, but it's another thing to see somebody doing it and being able to talk about what didn't go so well, what did go so well, and how they might bring it to their own district.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you two examples from our site visits. One, we were in Ohio in a school district, and I saw an online PE course. And so it was a asynchronous course where if a student is already very physically active and they want to wear a heart monitor to register their workouts and show that they're getting, you know, physical activity in lieu of a PE class during the day, which would then open up another course in their day for some career pathway, something they're interested in, they want to do, why not let them do that? And so we took that idea and brought it back and adapted it. And now we're running that in both of our high schools to where kids can access that. I will tell you, without naming the school district,
that's a great innovation. It really is. I mean, you say the word innovation and one thinks that has to be so profoundly, you know, it's a real way of just thinking or seeking a third alternative. I will tell you, though, I talked to one district that was doing something similar for summer school, and they nailed a kid because he had tied it to his dog, and they did a home visit to say, your heart rate is incredibly high, and we need to talk. It was like, oh, no, it's the dog.
we're here on a wellness visit to make sure
that's
you're
right.
Okay.
I'm just making sure that you're not in like having a cardiac arrest or something.
But no, that was one idea spark that we amended and brought back and localized. I'll tell you, another district we went to was very proud of their computer program. They were one-to-one, but they were what we call BYOD, bring your own device. And so you walked around the school and, you know, Peter's got his MacBook Air, Joe has his Dell, you know, but Nick has the school issued Chromebook. Because if you have a device, go ahead and bring it. If you don't have one, we'll give you one of ours. But then you would walk around their school and the Chromebooks from the school were all ID tagged and etched. And so you knew exactly who the kids were that had computers and who didn't. And it was this staggering, oh my gosh, I would never want to do that to our children. Great intentioned idea, but it was the Scarlet Chromebook, right? This kid had to walk around with this physical manifestation of the fact they didn't have the same resources. It brought me back to my early days in administration when students that were on free and reduced lunch would go into the office every Monday morning and pick up their 5 red tickets that they could exchange for their free lunches.
That's exactly where my head went.
You know, we're better than that. We can do better than that. And so
I learned from an administrator recently. She said, when you know better, you do better. And so you're right. We can do better. And that is an excellent example of potentially what you might want to avoid doing. Yeah. Wow. My guest again today was Nick Poliak, superintendent of Leiden Schools in Franklin, Illinois. And Nick, what a treat to get to know you and to learn about you and to learn about your book, The Unfinished Leader. And, you know, you're right. We just keep working at it and we do that work together. And so thank you so much for reminding me about the importance of collaboration, of humility, of working hard, of vulnerability. I've really enjoyed our time together. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Peter. Honored to be here.
Music for An Imperfect Leader was written and arranged by Ian Varley. Sam Falbo created the Daruma Doll butterfly artwork. Imperfect leadership is not a scarlet letter. It is a badge of honor. It recognizes that serving as a lead learner is about being a vulnerable leader, an empathetic leader, a compassionate leader. And I'm proud to be an imperfect leader, so I hope you'll join me next time for another episode of An Imperfect Leader. leadership in After Action.